Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Relatable Finance. My name is Shane Phillips. I'm joined by my colleague and head of research, Joe Carl. We are members of the investment team at Providence Wealth Advisors, which is a financial planning and investment firm located in sunny South Florida.
So today we're going to discuss what levers you can pull to try and increase your portfolio's return, increase diversification, reduce risk, among other things.
So one thing we want to make sure we get across is we're not going to be talking about picking individual stocks today. So that's something that we don't focus on. We focus more on a top-down asset class approach. So we're going to talk about different investment styles, different sizes of companies. We're going to talk about different geographies. And that's really where we spend most of our time in those asset classes that most people will see in their 401k plans, for example.
Yeah, so again, we're not trying to say that individual stock picking isn't important or can't add value. It's just that our focus here today is going to be looking at things from a top-down macroeconomic perspective and how you can make decisions to try and improve your overall portfolio performance. So to begin, let's discuss investment styles. And it's probably easiest to try and compare this relative to a very notable index. So let's start off with large cap value versus large cap growth and compare that relative to the S&P 500. All of these are very large companies. In fact, market cap above, usually large cap is usually market cap above $10 billion. And it's very similar, so you can distinguish between these styles on these. Value investing is the attempt to try and find stocks that are attractively valued using different metrics. And probably the most notable advocate of value investing is Warren Buffett. And some of the companies that tend to be in the value space are J.P. Morgan Chase, Johnson & Johnson, AT&T, and Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm.
So when I think of value versus growth, I think about shopping. So if you're a value investor, you're looking for a deal. So you walk into that store, you see that aisle that has, you know, the sales signs above it, 50% off. If you're a value investor, that's probably where you're going to be shopping. You're looking to buy something at a lower price than it's actually worth. And you mentioned some of those companies. Different sectors also skew towards more value-oriented sectors. So you mentioned J.P. Morgan. Financials usually skew more towards value. Energy stocks are another area that tend to skew more towards value characteristics.
So let's switch to the other side and go over growth, where companies tend to have much higher earnings growth, but also tend to trade at much higher earnings multiples, or using Shane's example, are more expensive from that valuation perspective. Large cap growth is where the fangs hang out. That's Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. And here what you're trying to do is you're trying to project how strong that earnings growth is going to be, whether these companies are going to be able to innovate, charge premiums for their products, or really expand into a new marketplace.
Mm-hmm. And then when you say charge premiums, that's what I think of. So back to the shopping example, you walk into that store, you know, 90% of that store could be on sale, but you know exactly what you want. You know the Nike shoes, for example, are in the corner. They're not on sale, but you're willing to pay up for them. So yeah, you're one of these companies that are able to charge a premium for their goods, usually growing a little bit quicker, and you tend to skew towards those individuals that are able to pay up for those. And going to the sector allocation as well, you mentioned the FANG stocks, but technology stocks do tend to have more growth-oriented characteristics.
Yeah, so what's the big deal? Why compare both of these? Well, let's look at returns. Over the past 12 months, as of the end of June of this year, large cap growth was up 22.5% over the previous 12 months, whereas the S&P 500 was up 14.3% over the same time period. So you can see about an 8% difference there. And then if we compare that relative to large cap growth of the same time period, large cap growth stocks were up 6.7%. So almost, if you look at the difference between value and growth, that's almost a 16% difference between the two, quite significant.
Yep, I mean, very significant if you look over just a 12-month time period. So that may show some people who hear that, you know, let's just invest in large cap growth stocks. There's definitely times and in places that one should outperform the other. More recently, large cap growth has definitely been the place to be, but that could also signal a time where the tides might be changing and value could come into play. When we look at it from a portfolio perspective, we're going to hold both of these types of stocks, but we will tend to skew one way or the other based upon what our outlook is.
Yeah, so it's easy for people to say, wow, large cap growth has done really well. Let's put all of our, you know, eggs in that basket because it's done so well. And there's, you know, comments you can make to the contrary. They tend to sell at very high valuation multiples. So if the economy were to weaken a little bit, these would probably trade off because they trade at such high earnings multiples. They also tend to have more of their earnings derived from overseas. So with the tariffs coming to light and trade wars, those could be a headwind going forward. Let's shift gears for a moment and go to small cap stocks. And just to kind of make the distinction, small cap stocks tend to be a market cap between $300 million to $2 billion. That's obviously not that small, but they're actually much smaller than the large caps that we just reviewed.
Mm-hmm. So when you think of the S&P 500, if you're looking at large cap stocks, you look at those 500 companies, you'll probably recognize all of them. Small cap stocks, on the other hand, are largely going to be companies you've never heard of. So if you look through, you may see a handful that you do actually recognize. Names like Grubhub and Zillow are some that came out as ones that I recognize. But very different from some of those large cap S&P 500 companies.
Yeah, so let's compare performance here. If we look over the past 15 years, both small cap value and small cap growth have outperformed their large cap style counterparts by an average of almost 1%.
So when you think of small cap being, like they said, smaller companies, less stable, less durable, there's going to be some additional risk. And if you look historically, there's something called the small cap premium, where you should get more return for small cap stocks because they do have that added risk. So over the last 15 years, we've seen that actually play out. But when adding something like this to the portfolio, it should come with the understanding that they will probably be more volatile. There's probably slightly more risk involved than large cap stocks.
Let's move outside the U.S. and go over international stocks and how they performed relative to their U.S. counterparts. Before we go into this, let's kind of make a distinction between international developed, which would be places like Western Europe, Canada, Australia, Japan. These are very different from the emerging market countries, which would be places like China, Russia, India, Brazil. These have much higher growth, economic growth potential, lesser income per person, but also more risky from a political standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the two different groups, international developed are exactly that. They're older countries, they're more mature countries, probably less similarities or more similar than emerging markets. Emerging markets, on the other hand, are going to be very, very different, both because they're younger, they're growing, but there's a lot of different things happening between China and Brazil, for example. There's going to be a large difference between countries like that.
So if we look over the past 20 years and compare international developed stocks to large cap U.S. stocks, international developed has actually underperformed somewhat if we look at them on an annualized basis. However, if you look at it from a batting average perspective, over the past 20 years, 10 of those years, international developed has outperformed. And in those years in which they tend to do so by a decent margin at 7.2%.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the outperformance, either with U.S. or international, it does tend to be fairly cyclical. One will be doing very well over a time period, and then it'll switch. And if you look back to 2002 until 2007, international outperformed each of those years. Some people kind of forget about that because more recently, U.S. has been much more dominant. And this is another case where we do think you should have some exposure to both, but lean in or lean out of those markets depending on what your outlook is, what you're seeing in the markets.
Yeah, and let's go to emerging markets. And these have actually performed, fairly closely in line with large cap stocks over the past, 15, 20 years. But U.S. has done relatively well here as of late, so it's really even that score. But if we look at it from a batting average perspective, emerging markets have actually outperformed 12 of those 20 years. In the years in which they do, they tend to outperform by 22.4%. So that's a pretty big gap.
Yep. So we kind of talked about added risk with small caps. We would say there's added risk with emerging markets. They are very volatile. Take a year like 2017, where emerging markets were up almost 35%, which is a great year. I think anybody would take that in their portfolio. But that knife cuts both ways. So there's going to be great peaks. You're also going to have very low valleys. So emerging markets, definitely another area that you can add to the portfolio for diversification, potential upside, but you're also going to be adding some risk to the portfolio.
Yeah, and an important point to make here is that anytime you invest outside the United States, you're going to have to deal with currency components. And both international developed and emerging markets year to date have been under a little bit of pressure. specifically emerging markets, and a lot of that has to do with the weakening of their currencies. You know, the Fed is starting to raise interest rates here in the United States, or we have been. That's causing the dollar to appreciate in value. So the returns year to date for international and emerging markets have somewhat been weakened by that currency component. That's always something to consider when you add that international exposure. That being said, the currency component tends to even out over the longer term, and it tends to be more focused on the actual stock returns of those respective regions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just another way of thinking about added risk to the portfolio, or added unknowns, added variables to the portfolio. When you do go outside the U.S., currency definitely plays a big position in there.
So all of these investment styles that we just described, large cap versus small cap, value versus growth, international and emerging, all of these are available in active formats as well, and that's a lever you can pull, active versus passive. And the best way to understand that is probably to explain first what passive is. And passive is investing in a low-cost index fund that's not trying to tilt one way or another. It's basically mirroring an index, such as the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm. So when you compare that to an active manager, instead of buying all 500 companies in the index, they're going to look at those companies and pick and choose what ones they want. So whereas the S&P 500 would hold both Coke and Pepsi, an active manager would probably look at both of those and say, based upon how they invest, what they like to see, Coke is the better company, and they'll buy Coke and not Pepsi. So they're making that active decision of what to own and what not to own. And with that does come added fees for paying the manager to do that.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, the only reason that you would consider these active managers is if you think that they will outperform their passive brethren, so to speak. And we do believe that this is, it is a lever that you can pull. It is, there are times when we believe that you should add a little bit more active, or spaces where active makes sense. For example, later on in the economic cycle, active management tends to do a little bit better than it does earlier on the cycle. And then in certain areas, such as international, where information is less efficient, an active management team can really get in there, roll up their sleeves, and dive into the details and add value. Contrary to the U.S., where basically all that information is very front and center, very clear, and very informationally efficient.
Yeah, well, I just like to look at the U.S. So if you take two banks in the U.S., they're going to be very similar. Whereas if you take a bank in China versus a bank in Brazil, those two banks are going to be very, very different. So if you have an active manager going in there looking at both of those banks, there may be the ability to add some value.
Yeah, so wrapping this up, why does all of this matter? At the end of the day, we wanted to go over what levers that we can pull from an asset class and macroeconomic perspective to try and improve portfolio returns. We walked through this very quickly and acted as if it was, an exact science, and we're here to tell you it's not. We spend a ton of time trying to do this. It's actually a big part of Shannon and I's job to try and identify the areas to shift the portfolios. And a lot of it comes down to timing. You could be early or you could be a little bit late. At the end of the day, we think that these are levers that you can pull, and if you understand how these different asset classes, how these different investment styles respond and perform under different economic environments, you can really add performance to the portfolio, you can reduce risk, or you can do a combination of the two. So to recap, we have some levers to pull to try and improve performance. You have value versus growth. You have large cap versus small cap. U.S. versus international, and specifically international developed versus emerging. Then you have active versus passive. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Relatable Finance. If you have any questions, reach out to podcast@provwealth.com. And check out our Twitter handle at Finance Podcast.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. There is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision, and does not constitute a recommendation. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. International investing involves additional risks, such as currency fluctuations, differing financial accounting standards, and possible political and economic instability. These risks are greater in emerging markets. The S&P 500 is an unmanaged index of 500 widely held stocks that is generally considered representative of the U.S. stock market.